Today is November 16th, 1999. We're at Michigan State University, East Lansing, Michigan. I'm Jeff Charnley, interviewing Professor Pauline Adams for the Michigan State University Oral History Project for the sesquicentennial of the institution to be celebrated in the year 2005. Professor Adams, as you know, you can see we're tape recording today. You give us permission to tape?
Yes.
Okay. I'd like to start out with some questions about your early impressions of Michigan State when you first came. What's your educational background and obviously professional background? Where did you go to school?
I went as an undergraduate to Brooklyn College, and I did my graduate work, which was a master's degree at Columbia University in the economics department, where I concentrated on economic history.
Okay.
And then I took some more postgraduate courses at Yale University.
Okay.
Again, in economic history.
Mm-hmm. And what years were those?
Okay. I graduated from Brooklyn College in 1942. I graduated from Columbia in 1945. And then I was at Yale from 46 to 47.
47, I see. So during the war years, you were in
New York City.
In New York City, okay.
And I lived at home during all my college experiences. So I never had a dorm experience.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew what it was to live at college or live away from home.
Mm-hmm. Gave a little different perspective.
A different perspective. So I've been a sophomore ever since.
How was it that you came to Michigan State? What were the circumstances?
Well, in those days, a woman accompanied her husband, and my husband's first job outside of his graduate teaching at Yale was at Michigan State. So we came here in 1947, mm-hmm. August of 47.
Had you been to Michigan before?
Never.
And never here?
Never here. I had really never been outside of New York except for the 2 years we lived in New Haven, Connecticut, when we were at Yale.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So.
And anything you remember that of those early days that was striking about living,
well,
west of the Hudson?
Oh yes, a lot. When we arrived, we drove. It took us 3 days to get here from New York City. There were no super highways then.
Mm-hmm.
And we took a ferry, left Buffalo, on an overnight ferry, and then disembarked at Detroit, and then drove up, I guess, Grand River, all the way from Detroit,
mm-hmm.
and arrived here, I remember, on a Sunday. We were assigned an apartment in Cherry Lane, on the brick apartments, we call them.
Mm-hmm.
801 Cherry Lane.
You remember the exact apartment?
Oh yes, because I am still a member of a bridge group of women from 801 Cherry Lane, so I won't
same
forget
building.
It. The same, well, it started out that way, but there's been attrition along the way and
mm-hmm.
replacements, but I'm the only original member of that group. We were first tenants. The building did not have bricks on the building yet,
mm-hmm.
It was they called it a three-room apartment. It was really two rooms because
mm-hmm.
it was a bedroom, and there was a living room and a tiny kitchen that you couldn't eat in, and that was the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a child at that time, and we gave him the bedroom, and we slept on a pull-out couch in the living room.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the bathroom, whoever designed that apartment, did a lousy job. The bathroom was on the other side of the bedroom. So having a child who was a light sleeper, if for the first hour or two that he was asleep, we didn't dare go into the bathroom if we needed to.
Mm-hmm.
And this was very hard on us.
The ultimate sacrifice.
Right.
When you first came, were you teaching here, or was...
Actually, the first year I was here, I did teach
okay.
in one quarter.
Mm-hmm.
I taught in the humanities department,
mm-hmm.
or I think it was called History of Civilization then.
Okay.
And I did teach a course in the winter quarter.
Mm-hmm.
someone, Greer, Tom Greer, was on leave.
And you were,
I didn't take his place, but I took his classes. And so I did teach that one quarter. But that was all until I started teaching in this department.
When you first arrived, how was the campus different as you remember it?
Oh, it was very different. It was very different from what it is today. It was very different from New York City. Mm-hmm. It was very different from even New Haven.
In what ways would you say?
Well, the day we arrived was warm. Our furniture hadn't come yet. And I remember I thought, well, to make supper, I'll go out to the store and get some vegetables and some sour cream and just make a salad for supper. There was a little store that was run by the Prince brothers, where I think there are no buildings there now. It was right on, what's the name of that? Kalamazoo and Harrison.
Okay.
And I went into this little store and I asked for some sour cream. And you wouldn't believe what the clerk said to me. He said, "Lady, all our cream is fresh." Well, I knew I was in a different culture. I knew that this was a different world. And in little things like that, it took a little while. Our apartment, as I say, we were the first tenants there, and our apartment had an apartment-sized stove. It was an electric stove with three burners on the top. Mm-hmm. One of them didn't work. So I called the housing manager, and I said, this is a new stove, but it's defective. I suggest you return it and get a fully operating stove. And he said, "I'll be right over." And he came over. And he said to me, "Have you ever cooked on an electric stove before?" And actually, I hadn't. We had a gas stove in the East. And I said, "Well, as a matter of fact, no." And I was going to tell him it was a gas stove. And he said to me, "That's the trouble with all you Southerners. You only know wood-burning stoves." Well, I mean, it was a very different world than it is today. We were the first group of faculty who came from outside Michigan. The university was expanding into a university, from a college into a university, and it was called Michigan State College at that time. Mm-hmm. And the feel was completely different. And we were foreigners and we were strangers, and it was very different.
Mm-hmm. And so the World War II, the group generation that went through and fought World War II, did your husband use the GI Bill when he went to?
Oh, yes, to graduate school.
Graduate school.
Was okay. With the GI Bill.
So you
Bill.
Were part of that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Influx of large numbers of students and faculty alike.
Absolutely. And many of the students were GI Bill recipients. Mm-hmm. They were veterans.
Did you notice a difference, even in that first class that you teach? I know it's been a long time since then, but attitudes of students on campus toward either their studies or the university as a whole or college, did you see any qualitative differences?
If I'm honest, I don't remember. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've always loved teaching. I always enjoy being in the classroom. And I enjoyed it, whatever it was. And I don't remember any particular problems with the students. But it was only a one-quarter experience. Okay. And I really don't remember the mm-hmm. student body that well.
Mm-hmm. When did you first begin teaching in American Thought and Language?
In 1956.
In 56, okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 56.
And the course.
It wasn't called American Thought and Language then.
Right.
And we were our classes were over in Quonset huts mm-hmm. on the South Campus. Mm-hmm.
And the curriculum mission at that time, was it teaching writing, or was it a variety of?
It was teaching reading, writing, listening, speaking.
Okay.
And I think it was called communication skills.
Mm-hmm.
And those were the four dimensions. And I must say, it was a very disappointing program. I mean, I thought it was a very weak curriculum.
Mm-hmm. And it was a centrally designed and
yes, everything. Yes, a common syllabus, common tests. It was there was practically no leeway for the individual instructor, and the students took it very lightly, and I don't think they got much out of it.
And that changed at some point.
Yes, it changed. We got a new chairperson, Ed Blackman. And he had the conception of a body of material from which we would work. And that body of material, that core of common material, was chosen to be American Studies. And so the whole, for me, it was late in coming, but it was a wonderful, miraculous change from what had been. Theoretically, the old syllabus, the old course sounded great. You know, we'll teach them how to read and write and speak and listen.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, the whole thing was a farce.
Mm-hmm. Were the class sizes large at that time?
As I recall, yes, they were in the 30s. And we met through, let's see, we had a common section where we would where all our sections would meet together one day a week in addition to the individual sections. I'm trying to recall what we did on that one common session.
Did they bring in guest speakers or?
No.
Oh, it was open.
No,
okay.
No.
I see.
No. And it was, there was a text that they used, and I thought it was a very poorly designed course as far as being effective. But you may get faculty here who thought it was excellent. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. Did you, in those early years, were there any faculty, any of your colleagues that you worked closely with in your teaching? Or?
Not initially. I didn't. I spent little time on campus. I would come in, teach my course, and then go home and do my grading and et cetera at home. Mm-hmm. Office space was very limited. When we were over in the Quonset Huts before Bessie Hall was built, we had a common office. There must have been four or five instructors in the same office. Well, you know, that's very difficult to do anything, to do your own work, to interview or have conferences with students. It was very limiting. And so I did a lot of my own work preparation, et cetera, at home.
Did you have a favorite text that you've used over the years that worked well, or that students responded to? Did you have any favorite one that worked well?
No, I think when we started on the American Thought and Language, when we started on the American Studies core, we were given several books to help prepare us to teach that, something like Horton and Edwards and others that were very helpful. And our text, I'm trying to think the anthology that we used. Do you remember the name?
What? Was it the Norton Anthology? Or
no.
It was a different one?
No, it was a different one. I have it at home. It was excellent.
Okay.
Very good. And I've always believed that course that came in to replace the original communication skills did as much for the faculty as it did for the students, because it rounded out the faculty in their background, and so that they even began to do research and write in a field that they may not have gotten their advanced degrees in. And it broadened them so. It did so much for the faculty, I believe, that it was wonderful. And I wish I could remember the anthology we used, but it was a very good anthology and very instructive, wonderful to teach.
Mm-hmm.